They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 124A. There can only be one times 53. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside co-hosts Steve Collins and Anthony Fitzpatrick. This is the mini pod show where we recap what we talked about earlier on in the week if you can't listen to the entire show. This week we're talking about our way too early 53-man roster predictions, and we're going to get straight into it, breaking it down position by position. We're going to tell you who we picked as our consensus picks. Just to let you know how it worked, we all picked our own 53-man rosters. We took each as a vote. The guys with the highest votes made the consensus team. The guys that actually made the team definitively, we're not going to talk about them too much, apart from maybe a passing comment. Those guys on the bubble were the ones we're going to talk about as we go all the way through. And let's get straight down to it. At the quarterback position, the only consensus pick really is Jared Goff, getting 4 out of 4 votes. We otherwise have Tim Boyle, David Blau, and A.N. Other as well, all receiving votes. Between 2 or 3 quarterbacks on this roster, some teams carry 2, some teams carry 3. I know that Ryan on the main pod was scathing about all of the other contributors, but boys, who do we reckon is taking that QB2 spot, and are we carrying a third?
First of all, just imagine getting such consensus about Jared Goff, but here we are. I think we talked on the pod that effectively there are no good options for QB2. And I think it's whether you're in Camp Boyle or Camp Blau or Camp Let's Get Someone Else In. But for me, our season's over if Goff goes down, whether it's with Boyle or Blau, and that's not a great position to be in.
Yeah, I've picked in Boyle because I just think out of the two of them, he's got the best chance of at least being able to do something on this team. We saw it in pockets last year. As Steve says, we're not going to win with these guys really, but you know, he gives us the best chance to close out a game, something like that. So we're only taking 2 as far as I'm concerned, because there are big camp battles at wide receiver, corner, defensive line. You know, I'd rather take a high upside development talent at one of those positions than just carry a third guy who's going to carry a clipboard. Easy maths for me, this one.
Yeah, completely agree with that. Not going to rehash that argument. Exactly the same reason for me. Let's move on to the running backs. And this was all consensus at the end of the day, pretty much. Apart from Jason Kubinda, who didn't get 1 of the 4 votes, everyone else got all 4. DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams, Jermar Jefferson, and Craig Reynolds. I do feel like Jefferson and Reynolds both deserve a little bit of chat here, boys. They're both guys who aren't in the top 2 picks, and therefore I think that does make them vulnerable. Jefferson perhaps with a higher ceiling but doesn't have the special teams upside. Reynolds came in and produced in parts. Do you see any risk to those two for the roster?
0. I think you carry all 4. Running back room, you need a deep group in the NFL. These two will come in and they've played well for us. Jefferson got injured just as he was getting hot. Reynolds had to wait his turn, but came in and played really well. 2 guys who've earned their way onto this side. You've got your 2 main guys in there. 4 good running backs there who can all put in good performances on their day. That's great for us. So for me, there's absolutely 0 danger to any of them, unless Greg Bell has a worldie of a camp, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I think I'm really interested to see what Craig Reynolds can do after a full camp. And, you know, off-season, when think about how he came in that practice game, barely got his kit, didn't know the plays and made an instant impact, and then played, you know, showed flashes when he came in. I think we all agreed Igwebuke is a turnover nightmare, but I think this feels fairly deep and I'm all for that. Shocked by Ryan's dismissal of friend of the podcast, Jason Kubinda, who received a very short shrift from the man from Bradford.
Shocking. I do think people will be surprised that Godwin didn't get any votes whatsoever, but there are other guys with special teams upside, and there are other guys with running back upside. And even though he has a little bit of both, he doesn't have enough either. So goodbye to you, sir.
Yeah. I just want to say on the thing with Ryan not taking Kabinda, I think in 12 months, that'll be a perfectly reasonable option to explore. I think in 12 months, we won't need a fullback. I think right now, limitations on certain areas mean that we could do with carrying one, but I think we'll be too good for a fullback in 12 months.
I don't think personally that teams can be too good for a fullback. It's just in terms of whether you want one in your scheme or not. I think Dan Campbell will always want one. I think he likes the idea of one personally, but I can see the argument. A lot of teams don't run with a fullback at all. More than half of the teams in the NFL don't. So, fair. Wide receivers, there were 5 consensus picks. DJ Chark, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Quintez Cephus, and Josh Reynolds. The guys on the bubble, if we're carrying 6, which we all wanted to carry 6, I think, were Josh Johnson with 1 vote, Khalif Raymond with 2 votes, and Khalil Pimpleton with 1 vote. Boys, that wide receiver 6, it may not even get taken. We may not carry 6. We could take 7. But what is it that is the deciding factor for you in terms of those guys?
It's scheme versatility. You have to be a guy who is good at more than just being a receiver when you're back there. Obviously, you've got your special teams upside that you need. You need the enough high development upside as a receiver as well to be able to coach, to become a better player, to move you up the rankings. And, you know, you just need to have different facets to your game there. I was the only one who voted Pimpleton because Pimpleton is a very dangerous kick returner. He has a lot of upside as a receiver. He's not going to be threatening, you know, the upper echelons of, you know, the wide receiver 1s, 2s, and 3s this year. But we don't need him to. We need him to be able to come in situations to be a receiver. But most of all, we need him to be the return guy. Godwin is not that guy. He had his chance. He fumbled it, per se. And Khalif Raymond is too expensive to just be a depth receiver. So I think we're going to get shocked here. I think he could make the team. I think Josh Johnson could make the team. I think Raymond is not safe at all, especially with the cap hit that he carries. It's going to be a fascinating battle in camp.
Yeah, I went with Raymond just for his returning abilities and the fact that we'd lost a specialist returner at the running back room. So I've gone with Raymond, but yeah, this is a major camp battle and be interested to see how it plays out.
I chose Raymond and I'm going to root for Johnson and Pimpleton over him. I think that Raymond will be the pick because he's the established guy. And I think there's plenty of upside there in terms of the fact that we put him in a bad position to succeed last year. And he's a really, really quick guy, which this front office value highly. But Josh Johnson's got the quick feet in Pimpleton, as Ant said, is a fantastic returner and has got, you know, some wide receiver upside too. So it's going to be fascinating. I really struggled to pick that and it's borderline for me either way. Let's hit the tight ends now. Most of us carrying 3. I think that's about standard. TJ Hawkins and Brock Wright and James Mitchell were all mostly consensus picks, although Ryan shocked us all again by taking Derek Dees Jr. instead of James Mitchell on the main roster. I cannot fathom taking a 4th-round pick who's injured and then put him on the practice squad because he's injured. I think you take him in the 4th round because you're keeping him on the roster come what may. I don't know if you guys disagree.
I think the only reason you don't see him on the roster is if he goes on PUP. If he goes on PUP, then you can create a spot for Derek Dees, which I think, you know, I would agree with. Derek Dees would be the first backup guy. So I think Zylstra's kneecap is beyond broken and he'll not be ready by then. But that is literally just down to the injury and whether James Mitchell goes on PUP or not. Those 3 will be guaranteed lock-ins for this team, providing they do well in camp.
Yep, Hawk. Brock Wright, Bill, and Dees on the practice squad. I think it's a no-brainer.
All right, let's move on then to the offensive line. We are taking, I think, because we took the borderline guy in this position, we're taking 9 offensive linemen. And they are the consensus picks. Decker, Jackson, Ragnell, Vitae, and Sewell as our starting 5. Nelson Brown and Obina Eze as consensus picks. And then the playoff guy who got in between 3 guys right at the end is Tommy Kramer, the guard. I know 3 of us picked Eze. Is he that high on everyone's, like, Would anyone be surprised to see him not get in there? Because I think all of us are kind of expecting him to get there.
I didn't vote for him, but I really like him. I mentioned this when we did the free agent, the undrafted free agent reviews. His run block is, well, his ability in the run game is unmatched. He's brilliant when it comes to the run game, but against speed rushers, he's incredibly bad, and he's got a lot of development to do. So I think he needs some time on the practice squad to acclimatise and then come up. But the trouble is, we've no depth. And, you know, when it came down to the decision of picking the extra player, and I think it was between linebackers and offensive line. And offensive line is strength of ours. And the weakness that we had last year was its depth. We got ravaged by injuries and we did not have the depth there. So we need more depth there this year. Eze and Nelson will give us good depth at tackle. We know we've got probably the best backup center in the league in there as well. And Tommy Kramer did well when called on. So that gives us a lot of room to maneuver, even with injuries or resting guys taking snaps off. You know, I just because I didn't put Eze in there, I wouldn't be disappointed if he did get in the team. But I would expect him to make practice squad.
With Nelson and Brown, I didn't vote for Kramer. We will talk about my vote, which was for a defensive player, a bit later. But yeah, I think Eze is someone with some upside that you would really hope could break through and start to challenge for that second tier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that Kramer only got two votes, to be quite honest. When he came in, he was really good last year. Like, it for a backup guard who was a UDFA, I thought he performed really well. I don't see anyone on this roster who actually is competing really for that guard spot. I don't believe that Evan Brown can be a guard. I think he is a pure center in the NFL. But he is one of the best backup centers in the league. But I think you're running with a specialist backup center in Brown, a specialist backup guard in Kramer, and in Eze, you can have a specialist backup tackle. And if you frame it that way, I wonder if Matt Nelson's in trouble. I'd rather Matt Nelson's in trouble.
Yeah, but we picked Kramer up off undrafted free agency. This wasn't like we put a premium position into him. If you get it right, and plus, you forget our offensive line coach just seems to be making gems out of absolutely everybody. Kramer was a swing in the dark who has done well as a backup. I think that's where the reasoning for him has come in. If he can do it with Kramer, he might be able to do it with Obin Azeed. Is it Azeed? The guy in there?
Zane Obeid.
So he might be able to do it with him, and he could keep him stashed on the practice squad till he needs him. So I can see the logic as to why they might have not gone Kramer here.
Yeah, fair. All right, let's go defensive tackle. And consensus picks here: Michael Brockers, Ali McNeil, Levi Onsarike, John Pennacini. And you did vote for Demetrius Taylor. You really think he has a shot?
Yeah, I do. I think Demetrius Taylor can unseat John Pennacini. And I say that very, you know, unwillingly, because, you know, we are a pro Pennacini pod. I've always been high on John Pennacini. But at the end of the day, he has been a career backup. He's been a decent career backup. But there is always the possibility to improve on him. You want, obviously, the highest amount of depth at the highest possible skill levels at every position. So if Demetrius Taylor is to come in and play really well in camp and Pennacini is still not showing much more development to what we've had from him so far, I think there's going to be a real challenge there because, you know, Demetrius Taylor is very, very versatile in where he plays.
You see at Appalachian State, and you're the college pod guy, you must have seen quite a bit of him.
He's very explosive and he plays all across the line. So this is a guy who has played edge there. This is a guy who's played inside at nose tackle, who's played at three tech. Now, you've got to caveat it with that he plays in the Sun Belt. Sun Belt is not one of the premier college conferences. So again, he's not going up against some of the premier guards and tackles in there. So you have to take that into account. However, saying that, he can play at edge. He can play inside the line. You've got the scheme versatility there to be able to do a little bit more with him than you can do with a guy like Pennacini. So, you know, I'm not saying it's an automatic getter in front of him, but we know Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes like the scheme versatile guys. You know, they're going to do it with Pascal probably. They're going to move him inside and out. And if you can do the same with Demetrius Taylor as well, then that's going to hold him in good stead, but he is explosive as they come. I would implore you go and watch some of his tape. You'll love it. He can be explosive, bull rusher off the edge, or he can just be a destructive force in the middle as well. So, and they went after him early. There was much talk about him early on in the pro day scouting process. He was the first guy to sign on the practice squad. He was the first guy to sign up as an undrafted free agent when the draft was done. They've been tapping him up for a long time, and I think they're really high on him. So that's why I think he's got a shot.
Just to go back to the defensive tackle class and the consensus we had, Ryan McCluskey was super feisty tonight, and he absolutely put both Michael Brockers and Levi Onwuzurike on notice tonight with some very forthright comments. So I think he was all for getting rid of Brockers, and we talked a bit about having like an older head in the room. So I'm expecting Brockers to produce more, and also Levi to make that breakthrough, because he was pretty damning. I have to say I'm a lot more pro Levi in terms of giving him a chance.
Oh yeah, I see the upside in Levi 100%. And I mean, you want guys who are going to work on their game throughout the offseason. They're not just going to take it off and then start their comeback and get up to fitness later on in the process. You want someone who's going to be getting ahead in those off-season moments. And you can see the way Levi's built right now that he feels like he's got something to prove. And I love that. Whether he gets there or whether he doesn't, he's taking it very seriously. And I love it.
Yeah. People should be, you know, worried about opposition teams should be worried about our strength at DT this year. We've a lot of scheme versatile guys in here who you can do a hell of a lot with, because you can add Pascal into that conversation as well. And if you bring a guy like Demetrius Taylor in as well, then you don't know who you're going to be lining up against in what system. You could do all sorts. You could have a lot of fun with these guys and use them to their strengths. Aleem against the run, Levi against the pass, and just really put some pressure on these running backs and quarterbacks. I'm really looking forward to seeing this year. We didn't even mention Bruce Hector. Poor Bruce Hector, who's come in and done really well all the time. And, you know, again, that just shows the depth at DT now.
Moving on to Edge, Aiden Hutchinson, Romeo Okwara, Julian Okwara, Josh Pascal, Charles Harris, all with the 4 out of 4 votes for the people on the pod today. I think we all agree, though, that Julian is perhaps the one most at risk here. Do we seriously think that he might not make the roster?
I don't see.
We need to see more reliability, him taking more snaps, and we need more production when he is on the field. I think it's really simple. He's flatter to deceive a lot. And, you know, I'm sure Ant's going to agree, but, you know, it's last chance saloon, I think.
I think it's all very telling that we had the same opinion on him, maybe bar Matt. You know, me, Steve and Ryan, we're all at a consensus here that he is just not developing. I mean, Matt says he is. He's finished the season off all right, but, you know, one of the best abilities is availability, something he's never been good at. And I just don't see more than a situational pass rusher inside there. He's really bad against the run. His brother had problems with that as well. And I think with the likes of James Houston coming into this side and fighting really hard for a spot, the outside linebacker position where maybe he might be able to make a little home for himself in this squad, there are other guys who can do that for you. And they're going to be a lot cheaper and they are newer to the game. You know, we've invested years in him now. And we've still not seen the development there. But do I think he's in danger? No. Should he be in danger? Yes. And I think it's very telling that multiple members of the pod, and we don't always agree with one another on stuff, we've all said exactly the same thing about him. He should not be safe. And we should be looking to replace him if he doesn't perform and if he doesn't show out in camp.
I think I would invert the argument that you had. You said, will he be in trouble? No. Should he be? Yes. I'm going to say, should he be in trouble? No. Will he be in trouble? Yes. And I think that is how I was trying to put it before in terms of thinking. I think that him and James Houston are playing for a similar, if not the same place on the roster. I do think it's interesting whether they carry both of them, but I think it's likely that they only carry one of them. At the end of the day, Julian was injured in his final year at college, which severely hampered his first season with us. and he was injured for much of last year with us. So, yes, he needs to produce, but it's not like the guy performed badly on the field when healthy. He flashed really good moments, but he was fine, average, not fantastic otherwise. The main problem with him is that he struggled to stay on the field, but we knew that when we took him. Now, I know it wasn't this current regime that drafted him, but it's a similar argument to Okuda. I know that we took Okuda higher, but the argument is he's not had a fair shake in terms of where he is with injury. And I know there's no room for sentiment here. If you can't stay on the field, goodbye. Like, get that. But I think if he can get a full season completely healthy under his belt, you will see the real Julian Aquara. And he got 5 sacks last year. Like, I don't think we should be sleeping on this guy. His ceiling in terms of number of sacks as a designated pass rusher is really high. And if he can get better against the run, we could see a turnaround that Romeo has.
Steve, did you just hear Matt talking about Deshaun Hand? Because I heard Matt talking about Deshaun Hand. Oh, he flashed. And, oh, he just needs to get fit. And he just needs to get healthy. And, oh, wait, he's injured all the goddamn time. And we've put in so much time into him. And it's the definition of insanity.
I think as we said on the pod, like, you know, Julian Aquara's highlight for a specialist pass rusher was in garbage time against a Packers second string in week 17. And that kind of says it all. I'd love the guy to work out. I'd absolutely love him to come back and make an impact. But as you said, it does feel like we're having this conversation for like the second off-season in a row.
I think Jesse Lamoni got 3 sacks. Pretty sure Austin Bryant got 3 sacks. I mean, that's not far behind what Julian got. And these guys are toast. You know, these guys are not going to make it going forward. And again, I feel really harsh talking about Julian like this because I want all our players to succeed. But I've been burned by Deshaun Hand. I've been burned by too many injury-plagued players who we have just blindly stuck with because they can flash. And I'm sorry, but those days are over now. We've got to be more hardline on injuries. And, you know, last year at college, injured. Last year, injured. It's just injury after injury after injury. And each injury, it gets harder to get back from. And the depth in that edge room now, he is not a top 4 edge in this with us anymore. Romeo, Charles, Aiden, you know, there are guys in there who are better and who are going to be your starters. So what is he? He's a depth piece. So when you get relegated to depth piece, it's like, well, send your rookies in there to be depth pieces because you've got your main guys already. Houston can go in there and do that job. He's a first-year guy, and you go in and give him the opportunity this time because you ain't going to miss Julian and you start in rotation. It's harsh, but I drink the Kool-Aid all the time. So I've got to be...
Yeah, Tom's not here tonight, but I think it's safe to say we've all ridden the hot Deshaun Hand.
Hmm. Oh, dear Lord. Right, let's move it on because this is meant to be a mini-pod and we'll move on to linebacker. Consensus picks were 5 linebackers, and I was surprised considering how much competition there is in this room, how aligned we were here. Chris Board, Alex Anzalone, Derek Barnes, Malcolm Rodriguez, and James Houston all attracting 4. And 2 guys attracted 2 but lost on a playoff to Tommy Kramer on the O-line. And those 2... receiving 2 votes were Jared Davis and Josh Woods. I think that Woods and Board is a really interesting prospect. I don't know who makes it out of those 2, and I don't think it's as clear-cut as some people think, but I do think we'll carry more than 5 linebackers. I think we'll carry 6.
What I think this was on the part of our podcast is a rejection of special teamers who are masquerading as linebackers. Pittman gone, Deion Hamilton gone. You know, we need to get rid of these guys who are taking up spots on the roster just for special teams. You need special teams experience and you need to be good as a player at that position as well. And sorry, we've had too many guys who've been earning a living just because of their special teams ability here. So I'm not surprised really that we've agreed on here. I mean, you could say is Houston a linebacker or not. I've said on many occasions, I think he's an outside linebacker. I think they're going to play him there. I think that's where you'll get the most success with him. You know, him, Rodriguez is in here, Barnes is second year, Anzalone is the leader. For me, it's kind of very simple. And they've said a lot of nice things about Board. Now, I get he falls into the special teamer, could be a linebacker category, but this is his first year here. So I'm willing to give him a chance to get in this team. The others have had their chance and they've just, you know, if you can't get into the team last year on the group of useless linebackers we had, then sorry, you know, you're not part of the future here. So I'm actually not surprised at all we picked the same ones.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying that these words on a Roar the Lions pod, but I actually feel a bit sorry for Jared Davis. And I think we should maybe give him a chance because he's gone to the Jets. He's played under Salah. We've taken him back. You would think at some point in that journey that there would have been some improvements to his game. He would have got smarter, you know, in terms of his decision-making. Surely there's been some improvement for us to bring him back. And take him, you know, and surely that year with the Jets will have done some good. So, you know, I was willing to give him a chance. He's a super athletic guy. He just can't put it all together because he doesn't really ever look like a football player. So, you know, I was up for giving him a go, but I think he just lost out.
I'm up for giving Jared Davis a go. The problem is that I think there's a lot of people in his place. Like, there's a lot of people just kind of in and around, and I wonder whether just the law of averages says he's not going to make it. I mean, friends of the pod, long listeners of the pod will remember that I was quite high on Jared Davis all the way through, just thinking there was something there that we just weren't quite getting. And I still am of that mindset. Like, I don't think anything has changed there. He is a blitzing linebacker. He is coming off the edge, blitzing linebacker. And we've never really used him there. And similar to a former Arizona outside linebacker whose name escapes me now, then went to Carolina, I think.
Sam Reddick.
I just see that sort of guy in Jared Davis. Like, just blitz him. Just do that, and I think he'll be really successful because I don't think he has it upstairs to do anything else. I really like the guy. He's nice, but that's the ceiling for me. And maybe that's too high.
Linebacker is going to be one of those positions. You've got no clue what's going to happen until after camp. A lot can change in camp because there's that many fringe guys in there that one could just have a really good camp and beat someone out we're not expecting.
Yeah.
So Davis could make it in there.
Cornerbacks. We had five consensus picks, and two others made it. I don't know why I didn't play these off, actually, but I just chose them both to go in. Jeff Okuda, Amani Oruwariye, Ifeazu Melifonwu, Mike Hughes, and Jerry Jacobs all got the perfect score, 4 out of 4. And then AJ Parker and Chase Lucas made it with 2 out of 4 to make a 7 cornerback room, which I think is the normal number that an NFL team takes, which is why I took both rather than one. And you spoke on the main pod about trying to reward the guys who've come in and played well. And in AJ Parker and Jerry Jacobs, you've got two guys who emblemize that.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, I get that. You know, that there are a lot of guys in there who've come in and done well, and there's a lot of talent in this room. And I said it on the pod, this is like the Darwinian section of the team. This is where a lot of guys are going to be fighting for, you know, the fittest to evolve, to go forward, because there's a lot of guys in there who potentially could be players on this team. You know, we didn't even talk guys like Mark Gilbert. Bobby Price had his flashes last year, and, you know, they can really push these guys and make a mark on this team. But I just think the likes of AJ Parker and that, they've come in an incredibly difficult situation last year. And some might say they've only got in because of injuries, lack of depth. Maybe, but they still took advantage of their opportunity and they played well and they earned a spot on this roster. And this Dan Campbell ethos about this team, you earn your spot on this roster. This is not Matt Patricia here, where if you're buddies with the coach, you get a game regardless of how bad that you play. We've left those dark days behind. We're now in the era of opportunity and reward. And for Parker to not be in this team next year, for me, unless he plays extremely bad in camp, in which case, fine. I can live with that. But if he plays well, then he should be on there 100%. And I made the argument that Okuda should not be starting in this team, and I will stand by that. I love Jeff. I really want him to do well next year, but there are guys who've played well in his absence. And just because he earns a lot of money on this team, he shouldn't go straight back into a starting role. We should quickly remember the Quinn and Patricia days when that happened. think of all those players on that top dollar money who we just played regardless. Oh, they play, they get a lot of money. Let's play them. How did that work out?
Terrible. Ray Flowers?
Yeah, exactly. And I use that as an example in the chat on YouTube. Drew was saying, oh, yeah, he's the fourth best played player on the team. I don't think you understand how this works. No, I do understand how it works. Dan Campbell rewards effort, not the amount of money that you make. And I am not going back to those days where I'm just playing my richest guys all the time, even if they're playing bad, because that nearly ruined us. And I think Lions fans should know better than to use that argument.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of take the opposite view, and I did on the pod. I think Okuda, you know, I don't believe that there's anyone in that cornerback room that's absolutely staked their claim to a guaranteed position, because most of them have only had the opportunity through injury. And I think if Okuda is fit, and he certainly looks fit, and if he has a good camp, and I'm sure he will absolutely be trying his damnedest. I really want this guy to succeed. I really want to stick two fingers up to a lot of people who are writing him off, both in various Lions chat rooms and hearing him constantly referred to as a bust by Bears fans and Packers fans. I want Okuda to do well. And I think if he's had a great camp and he's fit, he starts, and we just try and relaunch his career.
Yeah, it all comes down to how he does in camp, doesn't it? I was a big proponent of trying to say that I want him to start, but both of you are right in that if Okuda still looks like he's on the way back, of course you don't start him. And, you know, if he does look like he's hot in camp, I don't think Ant would say, well, if he looks like the best cornerback in camp, don't start him because he's been injured. That's an insane position. It's just that you're looking at both looking at what you consider to be the likelihood of what happens when you go all the way through. I think it's the same side of the same coin, just a different side, like edge of it. I don't know, like, it doesn't feel like your arguments are too far apart from each other, really. I don't know whether
maybe
that's
not. Then maybe not. But yeah, for me, it's all about the earning aspect. Mm. You know, we pride, you know, this team is built on the reputation that we give people chances. And if they earn that chance, it is theirs. You don't just replace them with a guy coming back from injury. So you do it like that. But, you know, I want Okuda to succeed, but, you know, whereas you might think you're doing him a favour just throwing him straight back in, that could also be the worst thing, just throwing him straight back in and watching him struggle to begin with. Building him into that team, as we've seen so many players do. Aleem last year built in slowly into that team, got better, ended the year really well. There are different ways to do it. And I think just throwing him in snap one, if he's not earned it, is very dangerous.
It could be very dangerous. Just a word on those bubble guys, AJ Parker, Chase Lucas making it, Will Harris missing out. For me, I didn't choose Parker because I feel like that slot corner group is pretty crowded with Mike Houston, Chase Lucas potentially ahead of AJ Parker, but Ant eloquently said why he deserves his spot on this team. Chase Lucas is in an uphill battle. I mean, for the same reason as AJ Parker, it's a crowded room. Melifonwu can also play there. Jeff Okuda has been mentioned as someone that could kick inside. And then Will Harris, he showed more at cornerback than he did at safety. It ain't saying much. And, you know, with over $2 million to save by cutting him, I think there's enough depth finally at safety and cornerback to say goodbye to him. Any dissent?
No, not at all. And with, you know, with the guys who we've not picked, this is not a slight against them. This is just a fact of that it is a stacked room with a lot of high-ceiling guys, and someone has to miss out. It's not that we're saying they're bad. It's like Chase Lucas. Not just going, oh, he's a seventh-round pick, he doesn't matter. It's just a case of there's a lot of guys in here, and there's only so many mouths you can feed with it. And he's not been here. It's the same with Hughes. You mentioned it there. Hughes hasn't played for this team yet. Parker has. And has earned a spot here. Hughes hasn't. This is the whole part of the thing that I'm on about. So it's going to be really interesting to see this camp battle. But I'm just hoping that they elevate each other up. They have to fight so hard to get a spot that the ones who do get there are going to have to play their asses off to keep their spot.
I think out of the new faces, I think Hughes is one that I'm like most interested in seeing, because we saw some, you know, really good stuff from, yeah, admittedly playing in the Chiefs backfield, but he's someone that I think could be a bit of a disruptor and could, you know, make an impact in camp and make this roster.
All right, let's move on to safety. And this was fairly conclusive. Tracy Walker, Deshaun Elliott, Kirby Joseph, and CJ Moore, all making it a vote for Juju Hughes and Brady Breeze each. But Joseph, Elliott, and Walker, I think, are firmly entrenched at safety 1, 2, and 3. Moore is there. We all agreed, really, on special teams, upside, personal protector on the punt team. Any thoughts on this safety group?
Absolutely no sign of Will Harris.
It's bad. Look, I said this on the main podcast, and I'll double down here. I'm not going to hide. At the minute, this is a really bad group of safeties. Tracy Walker, I love. He is a really good safety, but you've got to have a group of them. And right now, Kirby Joseph has not taken a snap in the NFL, and Deshaun Elliott has not done very much in his career thus far. And he's had a few years in the league now, and he has not developed. We are expecting him to just become a starter straight away after he's not been a starter anywhere else. So I'm really concerned about the depth. I don't want CJ Moore on this team. I know you say he's the pass protector and the punt protector, and it's an important role, but I'm sorry, safety 4 is not for a punt protector. It's for safety, who can also play on special teams. He's forgetting the one critical ingredient, is being able to play the position that he's on the roster for. And I don't want him on there just for that. Again, he's not earned a place on this roster. His play last year was atrocious when he was at safety. His tackling's weak. His positioning's bad. And it's just the special teams aspect of it. And I know this sounds really harsh, but we need these guys. We need to have a lot better caliber of guy on this team if we're ever going to be fully rounded and going deep in the playoffs.
All I would say in response to that is it's all well and good using that all the way down the roster to try and get the absolute best offense and defense we can on the field. But special teams is an important part of the game. And with the players that we're picking that have no special teams upside because they're the better offense or defensive players, you will hurt the special teams.
You will, but don't forget, we're going to play a lot of three safety looks this year. Your first replacement in there is a guy who can't play safety.
Yeah, that that's fair. We should take a fifth safety. Yeah, 100%.
Yes. We need to be in free agency grabbing another one. You know, I could live with CJ Moore as a fifth safety because of what he does on special teams, but not as fourth, not when we're playing three safety looks a lot of the time. And they're going to be injuries. Fair. And, you know, this is the problem we had with linebacker last year. Too many guys who were not linebackers on that team because of special teams, not because of the guys at linebacker. And we have to eradicate that from this squad.
Yeah. Finishing off with special teams very quickly. Consensus picks, Riley Patterson, Jack Fox, Scott Daly. No competition for Fox or Daly at the moment. Rosas and Seibert, the kicker's missing out. Seibert had a good start to the year before Patterson took over. Any thought there's going to be a kicker battle? I think it's going to be a kicker battle. I think it's going to be very competitive. And Rosas was probably, coming into the season, the best of the three in terms of prestige and what he's done in the league so far.
Oh, don't. You're going to upset Ryan with that. I think.
But there's no debate in my mind that Rosas, pre-last season, had the best resume.
Yes. But I don't think we'll see them here. I think Seibert and Patterson will both be here next year. One will be on the practice squad. One will be lead kicker. I would expect it to be Patterson at the minute, but I expect them both to be here. Outside of that, special teams is what it is. I know we talked about it earlier, but returner would be Khalil Pimpleton for me. He is the returner. He's the makeup of that special team.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about kicker camp battles. It must be nearly the end of the pod.
It is the end of the pod. Any final comments, boys, before we sign off?
I think we did a good job overall, and I enjoyed it a lot more this year than last year. Because last year, I think all but about 5 or 6 of the spots we just unanimously agreed on because there was no depth there whatsoever. This year, we've actually had to have a discussion and drop players that we like. So I enjoyed it a hell of a lot more, and it just shows this team is going in the right direction.
Definitely more promising, but still a couple of areas of concern.
Absolutely. Hope you enjoyed listening to this mini pod update. If you want to hear a bit more in depth about how we actually thought about it all the way through, went through players pretty much one by one all the way through, do go back and listen to the main podcast. Don't forget our socials, Rule the Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and the Facebook feature at Lions Fans UK 1 Pride Worldwide. Articles on the draft ease we've had this season, RuleTheLionsUK.com. You send us a 5-star review, I will read it out on the show on the main podcast. Just remiss me to thank my co-host and Steve. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Let's go, Lions. One pride.
One pride.